Grounded, grounded, we say bon ça. Feel the earth and feel my heart. Feel the water, feel my heart. Feel my lungs and feel my heart. Everything is love in motion. Grounded, 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 so I can fly. Become one with the sky. Volcano fire high. Burn and burn and unify. Everything is love in motion. Niki siki ya furanta imba ta la 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 la. Nata musiki tikonta imba ta la 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 la. We say bonsa. Feel the earth and feel my heart. Feel the water, feel my heart. Feel my lungs and feel my heart. Everything is love in motion. Grounded, 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 so I can fly. Become one with the sky. Volcano fire high. Burn and burn and unify. Everything is love in motion. Grounded, grounded, grounded. Oh na na na. Oh na na na. Oh na na na. Grounded, grounded, grounded. Oh na na na. Oh na na na. Oh na 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 na. When we are happy, we need to sing it. Da 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 da. Sing it through the sorrows. Da 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 da. So we can fly. Become one with the sky. Volcano fire high. Burn and burn and unify. Everything is love in motion.
So that lovely song is from Brother M. It's called Grounded. And it is one of the songs that will be in the upcoming For Goodness Sake Music for the Nonviolent Future concert that my guest and I will be speaking about in the next half hour. I have on the line with me from Montreal, Veronica Pelikarik, and she is Pache Benes, Nonviolence Director of Education. She has been with the organization for 22 years. She co-authored the books Engage and Engaging Nonviolence and has led Pache Bene nonviolence workshops in Colombia, Peru, Venezuela, Argentina, Haiti, Australia, Britain, and the Netherlands, as well as in the USA. She's a Zen Buddhist, she is a transpersonal psychotherapist, and she's conversant in six languages. She was born in Italy, raised in Argentina, and she's a Canadian citizen. Welcome to the Peace and Justice Program, Veronica Pelikarik.
Thank you so much, Chris. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and if I were in Italy, would I say, if I greeted you, would I say pace bene?
You would. I mean, it is peace and all good. What else, you know, is very important in a person's life?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I want to talk about your book a little bit, but we gather today in order to talk about an upcoming benefit that's for Pache Bene, the organization. So first, tell us about the organization that you have been so intimately related to for these years and what they do and why it is important right now to help them.
The organization actually started 31 years ago, and it started in response to nuclear testing in the Nevada desert. And so Ken Buttigan, who really kind of founded the organization, decided to write a curriculum in order to teach people about nonviolence. That was From Violence to Wholeness. And he did this with a group of Franciscans. And so things have evolved in 31 years. We've been through so many different stages in our evolution. As the world evolves, so do we, right? It's part of what happens. And so our main focus has been all these years to show people that nonviolence is the best option for our cultural change, you know, to our social goal, in a way, is to mainstream nonviolence. But that's not the only thing. Obviously, yeah, we do nonviolent kind of action, and I'll tell you more in a while about our different programs, but it starts with us, no? Be the change that you want to see in the world, right? So we also do the spiritual part when we do our workshops, and we do a lot of things, and for a staff of 5 people, it's actually incredible. I have to say this because it is. That's, you know, like, what we do is pretty amazing. And this past year, with the online trainings that we have been doing, many, many online trainings, and we are training many people, we are hoping that our project, Nonviolent Cities, where cities declare themselves nonviolent and go through a certain process for that, and our other project, you know, the Week of Actions in September during Nonviolence Week. Last year we had 4,000 actions, and this year we hope to at least do that or more. We'll have a repercussion in how we deal with conflict, in how, you know, we name injustice, and all of these very urgent calls of Mother Earth to take care of her, you know, climate issues, climate crisis, and all of this, yeah. So that's what we do in a nutshell.
Yeah, and in Chico, the town where I am located, which is on occupied Michupta land, I must say, is that we have been involved in the Week of Nonviolent Actions many years, but we missed it last year with COVID, and you remind me that we should be thinking about that. But I wanted to ask you about this concert. It's called For Goodness Sake, Music for the Nonviolent Future. It's an online musical festival featuring scores of artists and brief presentations on the power of nonviolent change. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, so last year we had an online conference, you know, around, we always have it around Hiroshima Nagasaki Day, and, you know, we this year it's a bit later, but basically last year we had this online conference and we had 1,000 people participating. Mm. It was fantastic, you know, it was all these wonderful people who are, you know, at the front edge of movements, and so they came to present. But we thought this year, with everything we've gone through last year and everything else, we wanted to do something different. We wanted to kind of do something that would lift people's spirits, you know, and create an atmosphere of coherence and celebration. So we thought of doing this music festival. And at the beginning, we were a little bit nervous because, you know, none of us are really kind of like in the music scene. But as it turned out, you know, Jim Crosby, who last year organized something wonderful in Austin, Texas, with musicians, said he would come and give us a hand. He would kind of like participate in helping get this together. And so with his help and our expertise in tech and things like that, and the wonderful work of Rosie, who does the posters, it's happening. And we devised a kind of like program where co-sponsors would get who would raise money for us would get a part of what they raised for themselves, and so the concert can be free. And the day before, Rivera's son, Henry Cervantes, and myself, we are doing a workshop on music in the movements. It's called Tune It Up. Turn It Up, actually.
Wow.
Turn It Up. And so we already have 70 participants in the workshop the day before the actual festival. And so it all turned out beautifully.
Wow.
Actually. Yeah.
That's great. So so that will be on August 20th, the workshop, and the music online music festival is August 21st. Can you tell our listeners here at KZFR Community Radio, how would you participate in this?
Okay, so you have to register for the music festival, and then you also register. The music festival is free, and the three-hour workshop that we are doing is $25, I believe. And so you just register for each one of those. And yes, the tune, Turn It Up workshop, we're going to talk a lot about how music has been crucial in movements. Well, we know the civil rights movement, right? We Shall Overcome, and, you know, like this is the first thing that comes to mind, you know, people. But also, all these countries like Estonia, you know, they went through the singing revolution. They freed themselves from Russia through singing. And there's so many stories people don't know about how music played a very important part in the success of revolutions of all kinds. So it's going to be a fascinating workshop, yeah.
Oh, I love that. I just went through a experienced myself at Beale Air Force Base, and we had terrible mosquitoes, and we had 2-hour vigil there, and luckily we had a lot of song, and it got us through it. Sometimes it just helps you.
There you go, you know.
Helps you endure. But so the website where I think people could go is Pace e Bene, and I just want to spell it PaceeBene.org. So that way you can participate in this. I looked through the, last night I spent some time, the featured musicians, it's a very long list, but I went through and listened to a lot of their songs. We started off with Brother M here on the Peace and Justice Show with a song called Grounded. And if you don't mind, Veronica Pelikarik, I just want to play another of the artists who is going to be participating with you. The YouTube video with this, people won't be able to see, but his name is Justin Michel or Michael Williams, and he or they is an incredible artist, because this song is Broken Mirrors, and the person, the artist, reflects out to people, too fat, too broke, to this, you know, to that, you know, our self-images of ourselves. And I'll just play, I'm not going to play the whole song because I want to honor your time and being with you. But this is one of the incredible artists that they are having for this wonderful concert, For Goodness Sake, Music for the Nonviolent Future. So just, let's just take a listen to this.
Mirrors are broken inside. The mirrors are broken. Truth is a lie. Mirror, mirror on the wall, I can see myself no more. Can you feel to retouch me? I don't wanna see the flaws. I wanted you to be the one to rescue me from me. The slave, the master, mirror, mirror about to fall. No one's playing fair at all. The mirrors are broken. Broken inside.
All right, so coming back to my guest, Veronica Pelikarik, I know that you have spent years of your life developing nonviolence curriculum, and one of the things that I particularly loved about your writing is an article you wrote
how stories of nonviolence can break the cycle of violence. And you talk about, since violence often provokes more violence, part of breaking the cycle is telling new stories. And also tenderness toward the self. And that's what the artist is getting at there, exploring the connection between our thoughts and emotions. Can you talk a little bit about these subtle roots of violence?
It's one of my favorite subjects, actually. A little bit, I will talk. So for me, you know, the same violence that is outside is somehow inside. It's a culture of violence, right? And we are taught as children to compete, to be aggressive, that the only way to get on in life is to really kind of like be out there and fight for what you want and things like that. And that begins to create a war inside. And that war inside is very subtle because it's between really the cry of our true selves, you know, which is rooted in the heart, which is about love and compassion and kindness and empathy and all these things, and the other conditioned, enculturated part that says, you know, that's not the way to go. We have to go to war, you know. And so it takes a long time. I know from my own history, you know, like growing up in Argentina and going through the dirty war, what we call there. And this gets kind of like, we think that this is reality. We think that this is life. But actually, you know, life is about brotherhood and compassion and about tenderness. And it all starts with us. You know, when they say, and this is a cliche, you know, you can only love another if you love yourself. Well, you can only be nonviolent if you're not violent to yourself, you know. And it's very subtle, this inner violence. It's like the song says, it's the mirrors, you know, inside. We think we have to be this, we have to be that. We need to have a certain physical profile. We need to, all of these things, you know, that undermine the core of the beauty that we are.
Yes. Yeah, that's, I agree with you there, and I think that I see that in myself, I see it in others, and it's so crucial because it is a continuing process, you know, and this is why some of this nonviolence work is so important, and I think perhaps people don't realize the importance of it. Can you tell us a little bit about what nonviolence means to you and what it has meant as a teacher of nonviolence, because a lot of people now are kind of adopting or accepting or just being very pragmatic about, well, if this happens, I do this, you know. And so I'd like to hear what you have to say about the importance of being grounded in nonviolence.
Well, for me, nonviolence is, and I'm borrowing from Gandhi and King, nonviolence is about truth, you know. Gandhi used to say, nonviolence is God, right? This is what it was for him. But for me, it is so many things. It's not just one thing, you know. It is really like a model for a different culture. It's a model for transformation. You know, if you ask anybody what they want after they've lived a life, and they would say peace and love. So nonviolence shows the way to that peace and love through personal, interpersonal, and social global transformation. And that encompasses the values, and that encompasses modeling for others what that is. And then people awakening to that reality in themselves. You know, you can talk to people, you can explain, but until people live the experience of that transformation, and that because of that transformation, their lives, their relationships, their connection to nature begins to light up, and they feel totally alive in a different way than before, that experience is what will bring about the change. Many people having that experience will bring about the change, not kind of so much talking about it or the the quote-unquote the theology of nonviolence, but the actual experience, what happens to me when I transform my anger, what happens to me when I transform my greed, my jealousy, you know, all of those things, how my life from being something very, a struggle, becomes a discovery and an adventure.
And you wrote a book called Engaging Nonviolence, Activating Nonviolent Change in Our Lives and Our World. You co-wrote it with Nina Covetes. I'm sorry, Nina, if I don't pronounce your name right. It is a study program, a 15-part study and action guide offering participants a wide variety of principles, stories, exercises, and readings for learning, practicing, and experimenting with the power of creative nonviolence for personal and social transformation. And you used that word earlier, too. Engaging nonviolence is designed to build your capacity to use these methods to address the direct structural or cultural violence that matters most to you. So you're getting people from all over the world, people who have been in war, been under structural racism, you know, who have had so many different experiences. Can you talk about this book and the lessons that you learned from all, maybe what's most important, the kernels of this book and your practice?
Okay, can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
So this is the story of a man in Albania. So this man in Albania, he went through the Balkan War and he saw his mother and his father killed in front of him in the most horrendous way. And so he escaped to the hills and hid there for 3-4 months. And there he came to a profound transformation in himself, realizing that this was what had happened to him, had happened to millions of people throughout the centuries. And so he came back, and he was a totally transformed man, and everybody that came in contact with him saw that he was totally transformed. You know, he was stable, he was grounded in a world of chaos still, you know, in Albania. So a social worker came to him and said, how do you do it? How can you be so stable, so grounded, so peaceful in the midst of all this? And he said, I ask myself one question, and one question only. How can I stop this from happening to my children? Years back, the same social worker went back, and he had managed to reunite the Serbs and the Bosnians to live together in the same community, in the same neighborhood, and he was a light to everybody else because he had done that transformation in himself. He had realized that his actions mattered to the future of humanity, the future of his children. And so for me, you know, that possibility, and it comes through education. I mean, you cannot, unless you can imagine something, you cannot even, you know, you cannot even conceive of the possibility. You have to be able to imagine and to visualize and to intend and all those wonderful things. So what we're trying to do through Nina, by the way, is Dutch. She married a man, a Greek man, lives now in Thessaloniki and just has had a baby, which is wonderful. But, you know, so we came together because she said, you know, we have to Engage is dated. We had done it in 2005. And so she said, let's update it together. She had been my student. And then it turned out to be a different book. We worked on it online for 2 years, and it was an incredibly rich relationship for her and for me, and it continues to be. I feel, you know, we both feel we are family kind of thing. It was a wonderful collaboration. And so, you know, like, what we're trying to do here is give people tools, but not only tools, a vision, like a concrete and grounded way of to be able to step out of our conditioning. Our conditioning is so steeped, it's so subtle in the lessons of violence we have learned, and to learn how to be in the world in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's even been an education just talking to you for this 24 minutes that we've had together. I'm realizing things in myself, my anger and my unwillingness to to work very effectively. So we are talking about this music festival that's coming up, and it celebrates the power of music to change the world, and it supports the work of Pace Bene, Campaign Nonviolence, and over 30 local and national co-sponsors working on peace and nonviolence. It's going to take place on the 21st, and you can get information at paceibene.org, and then we'll put those in the notes with the archive of the show. Veronica Pelikarik, we have to part now, but I would like to have you say whatever last thing you would like to say to KZFR listeners here in Chico, California that might help us. We are under terrible duress here with fires, fire refugees, homelessness, real despair. So have at it.
So what I would like to say in parting are the words of Charles Eisenstein: keep the vision of the beautiful world you long for in your heart and go forward, because the world needs you with that vision of the beautiful world we all long for. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for your life work and for being you. Really appreciate that you were with us today on the KZFR Peace and Justice Show.
I really appreciate it to be here. Thank you so much to you, Chris.
All right. Pace bene.
Pace bene.
Oh, all right. So here we are, Peace and Justice program. We're on every Friday with rotating hosts from 11:30 to 1. We're followed by Playing Dead at 1 o'clock. And I want to thank our underwriters before I go on. And I want to play one more song from that conference. They have the Therapy Sisters, who are hysterical, really funny. So and with always, of course, that undergirding of truth. And I'll also play one of their songs in a minute. But I want to thank our underwriters, who are Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, organic groceries and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op, open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And Chico Velo, supporting bicycling, education, and advocacy since 1980. Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycle and park it safely at their bike valet when it's available at the Thursday night market and the Saturday farmers market. For more information, visit them at chicovelo.org and find them on Facebook. I'd like to also thank the Northern California Autism I'm not going to thank them, but I'm going to urge people to know about this. The Northern California Autism Symposium returns on Friday, September 24th to Chico State. Presenters will share the latest interventions, services, and supports available for individuals with autism spectrum disorder and their families. Information and registration at ncas.csuchico.edu. Also, lastly, I'd like to thank Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, family-owned and operated, argued over since 1980, reminding listeners to think for themselves but drink with others. And it is still 2 minutes to the top of the hour, but I'll go ahead and say that this is FM 90.1, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. I would like to remind you that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters, just my own and my guests. And so let's have a little therapy. You ready for some therapy, folks? Here we go.
To cool down,
Waiter, can you bring me some aluminum foil? I gotta conjure up a cab for downtown. Waiting for the light to change to green, and waiting for a turn, waiting for the right turn, waiting till it's my turn to be seen. I wanna be seen. Till then I'm waiting for a check in the mail. I got a big stack of bills that's past due. Waiting for my mama to get out of jail so she can come home and tell me what I have to do. Waiting for some time alone to grieve, and waiting for my friends, waiting for my best friends, waiting for my house guests to pack up and leave. Get on home now, don't you keep me waiting.
Struggle.
This is Chris, Peace and Justice Show. And my guest isn't answering. We talked 5 minutes before the show started or so, but that is how it goes sometimes, the live radio. And I want to tell you about him and some of the work that he's involved in, and then maybe I'll try it one more time to get him on the line. This is a really difficult story, and it's a long one, so maybe it'll take up the whole time. But my guest is Rodney Roberts, and he was really doing okay in his life. He's from Newark, New Jersey, and he had recently moved to Montclair, which is kind of a more upscale town that's near Newark. And he had a son, and he was trying to make a good life for his son, and had a good job. And anyway, he got into a fight with a friend, and police were called, and then he ended up in a police lineup. And it turned out a 17-year-old had been attacked on the street, dragged into a parking lot, and raped. And the police said that she identified Rodney Roberts, my guest, and so he was arrested on May 25th, 1996, by the Newark police. There he was. He was charged with kidnapping and sexual assault in 1996, and he did a plea deal. He pled guilty to kidnapping and was sentenced to 7 years in prison. That was the only option his attorney gave him, and that would mean that he could be out in 2 years. He could be back with his family and resume his life, and so he took the plea deal because he didn't know what else to do at that point. At that point, they also dismissed the sexual assault charge, so he got a kidnapping charge. So, in 2000, 4 years later, he was denied parole because he refused to admit that he had kidnapped or sexually assaulted this victim, despite the fact that he had pled guilty because of the plea deal. So he had no lawyer, and he educated himself, and he filed a motion. And the motion, he got this really bad judge who is with him for all these years, which the story just goes on and on with him doing his best to file these appeals and this judge dismissing his motions. And his attorneys are bad, too. The attorney did find out, though, that the young lady denied identifying Roberts. And so then 2004... 8 years after the conviction, he reached the end of his prison sentence, and you'd think he could go home then, but nope. They decided he was a sexually violent predator and transferred him to a secure treatment facility. So in 2006, Mr. Roberts filed another pro se motion to withdraw his plea, saying, "I didn't do anything." And again, the same judge denied the motion, but he appealed in 2007, and the appellate division of the New Jersey Superior Court reversed it to send it back. But part of the problem was they never could find the original rape kit, which is kind of odd, because later, of course, they did. But so this judge again denies his motion, and so he appealed again in 2009, and the appellate division again reversed this judge's motion to withdraw the guilty plea, and because the judge had said it was time barred at this point, that he couldn't keep appealing, but the appellate division said no, he can appeal, and because of the whole thing about the victim's credibility and the fact that there weren't, you know, this person was not saying he wasn't the person. So finally, there was a DNA test, and because she gave birth to a child because of this rape, and the child was not the offspring of Mr. Roberts. And yet, still the same judge denies him again a third time, and again the appellate division reverses on this judge. Finally, the judge retires. Mr. Roberts is assigned a new lawyer. They find the rape kit, and subsequently, guess what? It was negative. Of course, it wasn't. It wasn't found on the swabs at the forensics exam that the young woman had at the initial time of the
that she was raped. So then the guilty plea was finally ordered vacated, and this kidnapping charge went away, and they dismissed the charge. So in 2014, the state of New Jersey set aside the finding that he was a sexually violent predator, and he was released from custody. So that was 17 years of Mr. Roberts' life. And he has filed a lawsuit, a civil rights lawsuit, which he told me today is still in a settlement. So we wouldn't be able to discuss that, he said. But this is not an unusual thing. What happened to him, horrible, grueling thing that happened to him, it has happened to so many other people over the years. The amazing thing about Mr. Roberts is that he taught himself law, and he did all these appeals on his own, and it's really quite incredible what he was able to accomplish in terms of challenging the courts and standing up for himself. But he was also helped by the Innocence Project, and that's been going on. The Innocence Project, let's see, where's my notes? For I believe it was 92. No, it's just since DNA testing really got involved. But it was found, yeah, in 1992. It's a 501c3. And their project, innocenceproject.org, is to exonerate the innocent, to do strategic litigation to improve case law through targeted legal work, to do policy department works to pass laws and implement policies that prevent wrongful convictions, a social work department which supports exonerees like Mr. Roberts as they rebuild their lives post-release, a science and research department which provides a research base that supports the legal and policy work, and coalition building, the Innocence Network, it's called. And here in California, we have an Innocence Project in San Diego. So this is, you know, part of systemic problems in policing and in law enforcement and in the courts. And I want to read you some more notes of mine. But the Innocence Project has helped 625 people have been exonerated so far with the help of 68 organizations since 2005. And now this work is worldwide, because this isn't the only country this happens in. All right, so I'm going to try to get Mr. Roberts back on the phone. I'm going to, so the two songs you heard was, of course, the great Nina Simone from her Best Of CD, and then also Toshi Reagan, and this song is Justice. And I'm going to go ahead and see if I can get Rodney Roberts back on the phone, since we haven't been able to connect yet. Here we go. Sorry, I couldn't get him. So Rodney Roberts, we were talking about, he's an exoneree after 17 years incarcerated for crimes he did not commit. And he works with the Innocence Project. And he also has his own foundation, the Rodney Roberts Foundation, where he works on criminal justice reform and also trying to prevent future injustices such as he went through. And I mentioned that he was from Newark, New Jersey, and I myself have a history with Newark, New Jersey, but I just wanted to read you this first, just to kind of make sure this is implanted in your mind. The criminal justice system's problems with racism start before the first contact and continue through pleas, conviction, incarceration, and release. According to statistics from the NAACP, although black people make up 13.4% of the population, they make up 22% of fatal police shootings, 47% of wrongful conviction exonerations, and 35% of individuals executed by the death penalty. African Americans are incarcerated in state prisons at 5 times the rate of whites. Black men face disproportionately harsh incarceration experiences as compared with prisoners of other races. Racial disparities are also noticeable with black youth, as evidenced by the school-to-prison pipeline and higher rates of incarceration for black juveniles. And I didn't mention that Mr. Roberts is black. So Newark, you know, I was there in 1967. I worked in a black community as part of a VISTA team. We didn't really know what we were doing, but we organized with parents of a school that was terribly overcrowded with awful teaching, something called team teaching in this antiquated building. And we worked with the parents, and I felt like we were moving towards something really positive there, since if something could have worked with one school, it might have helped with other schools too. However, in 1967, at that time, I was 22 years old, the uprising came when the police shot a taxi driver a few blocks from where I was living, and the city just erupted. It was hot, it was summer, and for the first day, it was like a Mardi Gras. It was very fun because the people were just taking things from these stores. And the stores in inner city Newark were exploitative. They had very high prices, and people couldn't get out. They had nowhere to shop, and it was pretty much a free for all. And it was, you know, I can't explain it, but it was fun. And then after that, the National Guard, state police, everybody came in. There's starting to be either exchange of gunshots, but it went on for days, and 26 people were killed. And it was terrible. It was just terrible. The city was destroyed. Black-owned businesses were shot up, and by the state police. And a lot of people lived in these railroad flats, and, you know, so, you know, people were killed in their own homes, basically. And it was a very horrible time for everybody. City was really set back. And it was very intense for me as a young person being there and seeing the level of violence. However, let's fast forward quite a bit. So one of the leading poets of our time then was Amiri Baraka. I would see him at city council meetings. He would come in a dashiki with his beautiful family, and he was one of the leaders of the civil society there in Newark who were trying to make change. The mayor, Adonisio, was completely corrupt and ended up spending quite a bit of time in prison for his actions, and the police force was all white, and they were completely racist and horrible. And any rate, again, forward, the city has been under a consent decree because of violence and because of police violence. And it required new policies and training on the use of force, searches and seizures, bias-free policing, body cameras, and internal affairs. And that's been since the Obama administration. At the end of the Obama administration, the city was put on this consent decree because they have been, you know, killing so many people. And so there was a number of reforms, training on stops, searches and arrests, as well as bias-free policing. And the mayor now is Ross Baraka, the son of Amiri Baraka. And he spent much of his time in office trying to get the two crucial groups, the police and the black community, to trust each other and work together. Under Baraka, the police have met with community groups, giving residents input into law enforcement, and they've explored how decades of violence traumatized them all. And it turns out that then police didn't kill anyone in 2020, which was pretty good, but they did use force in 453 incidents, sending 79 people to the hospital, so not so great. And, of course, black people were disproportionately stopped, frisked, and arrested from 2015 to 2019. Anyway, the Ross Baraka's Office of Violence Prevention has created, has used a lot of money, but 5% of the police budget now goes to public health approach, to public safety, and he's hiring and training social workers to replace police in responding to nonviolent incidents. So in a way, that community is modeling some of the change that needs to happen around the country. And I would love to have been able to talk to Mr. Roberts about it, because he's lived there his whole life, and you know what he has found, what he has learned, but we weren't able to do that today. So that is the end of my notes my interview with Mr. Rodney Roberts, who is on the National Registry of Exonerations. And if you want to read more about him, I hope you will. He's a really nice person, and I enjoyed talking to him earlier. And I don't know what happened, but hopefully maybe we can get him back on the show in the future, because I know he wanted to represent for the Innocence Project and for his own life. One of the things he said in one interview I saw is that it all happened so fast, and he was frustrated, depressed, hopeless, and this situation was completely inhumane. So if you can imagine being in his shoes. And yesterday on the Innocence Project Facebook page, it said that one man had just been exonerated. He'd been in jail for 50 years. 50 years. So... anyway, so keep that in mind. Keep that good work that the Innocence Project is doing on your wavelength. And we're going to go to my next guest here in a minute. I'll put some music on and we'll transition. Maybe I'll even go back to these therapy sisters. They are so funny. Let's see if I can find another one. Or maybe we'll just play that one again. Hang on here. I can't get anything that easily. Nothing works that easily. However, I wanted to just say, you know, on behalf of the Friday the 13th crew here at the Peace and Justice Show, which is me, that I'm so sorry about the fire and about everything is people are going through. I know Westwood is at risk and Janesville is at risk, and people you know, going through the same thing that the Campfire refugees and the Berry Creek refugees and, you know, everybody has had such a hard time, and I just send out so much love and support. And I hope that our community, I know it's hard to figure out where to put money right now, but I hope that you will find a way to help those people that are trying to rebuild their lives and are right now just completely lost. And I'm hoping also, too, that the fire does not take Westwood, because it was... it's kind of iffy right now. They had withdrawn the mandatory evacuations, and people were going to be able to go back to some of the places like Prattville and Lake Almanor and Chester. And now they've withdrawn that because of unstable conditions today. So if we can, hopefully dry lightning doesn't come today, hope that everyone will be okay. And then also the other thing that's on my mind, I'm just going to say it because it's big, is the whole situation in Afghanistan and seeing the rapid return of the Taliban. Like, they took Kandahar yesterday, and I don't know what's going to happen for the civil society. I don't know what's going to happen for women, and I'm very, very concerned, just like everyone else is. I don't think that air bombing is going to make any difference at all. And the United States completely blew it. I feel even bad for the veterans and contractors that gave, you know, good chunks of their lives and their, you know, who basically they ended up with such terrible moral injury, PTSD, whatever you want to call it, as a result of participating in that war. You know, the pivot to the war in Iraq by George Bush is the reason why this has gone the direction it has. And you can put it all on the people who brought you the Iraq war when, after the whole situation with 9/11. And we'll probably hear a lot more about that in the coming month. And I just send my heartfelt sorrow out for everybody who's been involved and is involved right now. And just sorry you have to hear me go on and on. But we were at Beale Air Force Base this week, and we talked about the, we had we have a handout. It just says, with respect to Afghanistan, no UN body, either before or after the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, passed a resolution stating that the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan was legal. The invasion of Afghanistan was, in fact, illegal. So even from the beginning, none of this was done on the right foot. And our handout goes on and talks about, it's from a website called No Drones, KNOW. I do suggest No Drones, and about all the drone warfare and killings, non-battlefield targeted killing, it's called, which goes against the, violates the UN Declaration of Human Rights, which is international law. All right, so let's see about some music here. Hang on. All right. Hang on. One sec again. Sorry. All right. So let's have some more Toshi Reagan. I'll get our next guest on the line a little early. Thank you for hanging with us here at the Peace and Justice Program. Toshi Reagan. And I have on the line with me Bill Monroe. Bill's a registered nurse and a voting rights activist. He's been in Chico for 6 years with his wife, who is a nurse practitioner. And they are
They have a son who's a software engineer in Oakland, and they have a daughter who has special needs and works at Little Red Hen. They are participants with the Friends meeting in Chico, and they are very much involved in local concerns about politics. I wanted to thank you first, Bill, for being on with me today. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. I love peace and I love justice.
I know. And I just was waxing about the past, and I realized that you and your wife were both part of my life, too, because we went through the University of Missouri in Columbia at one point. So it's another.
Yes, well, that's where Lori got her master's.
Yeah, so there's all these connections with people. My last guest I had a connection with, too. So I wanted to ask you, I know early in the pandemic you were really involved with COVID, and you have been working with the health department in COVID. And I wanted to start off with COVID because we have now 437 new cases in 7 days. This was as of yesterday. There have been 2 recent deaths. 50 people are hospitalized. And on Wednesday there were 99 new cases. Only 40.59% of our Butte County is vaccinated. Your response?
We need to get more folks vaccinated. Problem is, of course, that vaccination has been weaponized by certain folks as a kind of political statement, and that needs to be let go of. I mean, folks need to, like, understand that their vaccine isn't for them. Their vaccine is to protect people other than them. And as long as folks kind of have a feeling that that nobody can force me to do nothing, blah, 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 then that's going to be a problem for all of us. I would like just to thank Governor Newsom. The reason I was able to spend over $200 volunteering in vaccine clinics this spring, got a plaque from the health department for my work, was that that Gavin put something through last year that allowed people with licenses that were inactive, and mine was inactive because I had retired, I let it go inactive, they allowed their inactive licenses to be reinstituted without having to pay a lot of money and have to do the CEs that are usually required, the continuing education credits that are usually required for renewal of licenses. So my current license that was reactivated because of that program expires in September. So I have an RN license right now, but it's going away, and I'm happy. I'm almost 70, and I'm retired. But I was able to give many, many, many shots and in other ways assist with the vaccine clinics because of that program. Mm-hmm. There are some reasons why people don't want to get vaccinated. It would be nice if the FDA would make it an officially approved drug. That would help some people with their decision making. But the so-called freedom angels of our North State, who go around shaming people for wearing masks and businesses for requiring masking, and the folks who are actively campaigning against vaccine. There were some people, I guess they were nurses, they were out demonstrating in front of Enloe Hospital, protesting the fact that Enloe was going to require them to have vaccines. That's just nonsense. If you're a nurse, in my opinion, and you don't want to get vaccinated for COVID, then you really need to become an Uber driver or something. You should really do something else. So yeah, that's my opinion.
Yeah, I share that opinion, and I know that, you know, I've already read the disclaimer on this, but, you know, we've had this at KZFR, we've had it, you know, everywhere. I don't know what it's going to take, but it's not logical, and it's not helpful. And so I just hope that people will do what's needed, which is to get a vaccination. Right. In my case, as an older person, I had a sore arm for 2 days, both shots, and I'm very relieved because I have underlying lung problems, and I would not want to get COVID. And it doesn't mean I won't get COVID, but if I get COVID, at least hopefully I'll stay out of the hospital with it. One thing that
I think is important to kind of consider in all this too is the potential for more changes to the virus, and that there's this Delta mutation.
Mm-hmm.
When people are unvaccinated and they get, the more people who are unvaccinated, the more chance there is for more variation to the virus, and we could end up with a mutation that's even stronger than the Delta, because people aren't getting vaccinated. They need to get vaccinated to prevent the development of more even worser versions of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people really think about that either. So it's,
Yeah, they're not connecting their dots. And, you mentioned Governor Newsom, and I know that there's a recall that very soon that we in California, who are registered voters, will be asked to decide whether or not we want to recall our governor. And I just wanted to read our listeners, there's just some of the things that some of the people that who would take his seat if he is recalled have said. Larry Elder says, encouraging vaccination is fine. Government mandating it is not. Assemblyman Kevin Kiley, Governor Newsom needs to stop using nurses and teachers as political pawns. Cox says, this is just further government intrusion into people's personal lives. Kevin Falconer says, Sacramento politicians should not be pushing uniform statewide orders on every school district. So we have... We have people who are running who obviously do not care about what it's going to take to end this pandemic, and with all
they don't care about dead children.
No,
and measles. I've been a public health nurse my entire career, and for like almost 40 years, and measles, mumps, rubella. You can't go to school without your measles, mumps, rubella shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are many, many, many instances in which people are mandated to do certain things.
Right.
I had to, because I was too old to get a measles, mumps, rubella shot, I did have to go in and have my blood drawn to prove that I was immune to measles, mumps, and rubella before I would be allowed to work.
Right.
If I didn't want to do that, again, there weren't Ubers around at that time, but I could have been a taxi driver.
Well, there's a lot of mandates on social behaviors, and they're meant to keep us safe. Like, I remember I'm old enough to know when we didn't have seatbelt laws, but then we had seatbelt laws, and, we all acquiesced slowly but surely. We all came around to seatbelts, and now many fewer people are killed because of they wear their seatbelts. It's just second nature. We never think about it as a government mandate, however it is.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, the helmet laws are still controversial. Some places, some states do not have helmet laws, and more people are killed. I happen to know, because I'm a nurse, that that has affected the transplant process. People need a heart or a kidney. If you live in a state with helmet laws, it's harder to get one of those because people are not getting major brain injury from their motorcycle accident. And they actually have to bring in organs from those states that have that do not have helmet laws.
Mm-hmm.
So public health is always a little worrisome to some folks. Like, I don't believe in mandates. This is freedom and all that kind of stuff. But it just makes sense.
Right. And, unfortunately, the politics of social media and the voices, the voices of January 6th that invaded our White House and put our representatives at risk, the politics of this recall, and mm-hmm. what happened in Wasaf Chico taking over our city council, they're all the same voice. And I was wondering...
It all kind of falls under the weaponization of these kind of issues. The reason we have a new conservative council is needles. The needle exchange program was weaponized. Needles, needles, needles. There's needles in our parks. What about our kids where there's needles? That was something that the city council really had no control over, but that was used in order to, politically, in order to get them unelected. And then homelessness is kind of the same way. These people are not coming from other cities, but that doesn't stop people in social media for saying that they do. 90% of them are from another town. No, they're not. You know, it's hard to argue with fiery rhetoric on social media. Even the forest fires and the drought crises that we're in right now, there was an amazing picture in the ER of Gallagher and Nielsen and LaMalfa standing on Oroville Dam behind the lectern that said "Man-made drought."
Yeah.
Okay, man-made drought, and they were blaming Newsom for the drought, you know, and it's man-made, but of course, it's ironic because it is a man-made drought. It's climate change caused by people that they don't believe in climate change because they don't have to because, you know, the Earth is only 6,000 years old and you know, they shouldn't have to worry about such things. So that the drought and the fires have all been weaponized as well, and, along with the COVID, and it's just awful. And then you can throw into that mix the thing of voter fraud. We need to have IDs and do all these new changes to make sure that, because of all the voter fraud. Well, the only voter fraud that took place in Butte County was Denley,
yeah.
who under penalty of perjury signed that she lived in one place when she was not living there. So
right.
And generally speaking, around the country, whenever they've investigated voter fraud, usually most of the people that were committing the fraud were supporters of then president.
Mm.
So I don't know. It's a thing that's just, you know, I fear for our democracy, I fear for our country, and I'm hoping that people can kind of come around eventually. We have a redistricting process that's going on now. It's a commission that's redrawing the lines, and people should go, you probably have the contact information for that commission. People should go to that commission and offer their suggestions on where those lines should be. Mm-hmm. I happen to think that Congressional District 1 should go from the left coast to the right border, and from Oregon down. According to the law, District 1, AD 1, Assembly District 1, Senate District 1, and Congressional District 1 all have to begin with the Oregon border. Mm-hmm. So then you drop south, and that would be a much more compact district than the far-flung, incredibly huge Congressional District 1. It would at least be square, and it would cut out, Nevada County and some of the southern counties from the current district.
Yeah, let me stop you. Bill Monroe is my guest right now. Your sound is a little muddied, so I don't know what's happening there at your house, but can you see if you can sit a certain way with that mic how you were previous to the last 3 minutes.
Okay. So, is that better?
Yeah, that's better. You know, the census has just come out, and it is interesting that the non-Hispanic white population declined by 2.6% since 2010, uh-huh. and that the African American population grew by 5.6, Asian population grew by 35%, and people who reported being more than one race spiked. And so the redistricting, as I understand it, and it sounds like you know a lot more about this than I do, will be oftentimes by Republicans, and I see that, you know, we could be so much better served if our congressional district wasn't so huge and so disparate. And
well,
as a voting expert, can you tell us about
really
that?
It's not really done by Republicans. It's a nonpartisan commission. It uh-huh. really is.
Okay.
But it needs input, and I think unfortunately, I think folks on the conservative side are getting more input into it because they're showing up at the meetings more and stuff, and that's an issue. Unfortunately, we lost a congressional district because of population shift, mm-hmm. And so CD1 has to increase its population. So that usually involves increasing its area as well. So it's an interesting problem, but I think that we have much more in common with Humboldt County and Del Norte County. It certainly includes all of the Klamath River drainage area, and so dealing with things like the salmon and water issues would be similar. They want to know similar communities. How do you fit into the area that you want to discuss, and what your community is, and how your community relates to surrounding communities? Their process of is pretty well defined input, and then you can actually draw a map of what you think the district should be. Mm-hmm. So,
and you don't have that. I've never been involved in that, so you thought maybe I had the resource for that, but. Do you have that in front of you somewhere? Because I think that is important for our listeners who might want to get involved in that. As a voting rights activist, I sure appreciate this information, Bill Monroe.
Let's see.
Go ahead.
A copy of what I made, and I'm pretty sure the URL or whatever ought to be on here.
Okay, while you look for that, I just want to remind our listeners, too, that groups like Save Chico had a PAC money, and most of this PAC money was developers. There is a huge push in our area. You know, behind all the rhetoric about homelessness and needle use, there is money coming in from outside for development. And the issues of open land and resources like water are what is really important. So if you follow the money, you will find out what it underlies a lot of this brouhaha about other issues.
I have it.
Good. Go ahead. Yeah. Bill Monroe.
My wife got it for me. She's listening to the show from the other room.
Oh, good. Thanks, Lori.
Yeah, that's right. WeDrawTheLines.ca.gov.
Okay, we draw the lines. Okay.
So one word, WeDrawTheLines.ca.gov.
Okay. .ca.gov. Okay, I'll put that in my notes on the archive. Bill Monroe, we started to talk, and we talked, and we bounced around quite a bit, but I want to get back to this recall of Gavin Newsom, because he has done really positive things during his time in office, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of his achievements, because the last thing that I think California needs right now, with so much going on, is to have somebody become our governor who has no experience and represents maybe 13% of the voters, just because of the way this thing is set up. So just
right.
talk about this man and some of the things he's done.
Sure. Well, first of all, I think it's important to note people should vote no on the recall and not vote for anybody else, because he's up for election next year. I mean, what is the big deal here? We live in a democracy with elections every 2 or 4 years or 6 years, depending on the office. And he's up for election next year. This is the recall process, I think, in this case is being abused because Gavin has done a lot of good stuff. He's done a lot to improve the CAFE standards for automobile exhaust and mileage. To directly address climate change. He has done a lot for renters, for instance, and protecting them from being kicked out of their homes due to the COVID crisis. And he's done a lot for education. I didn't come prepared really to talk on specific things that he's done, but he's done. He has, as you said, done a lot. And I'm afraid whenever I talk to people who are calling for him to be recalled, and I said, "Well, why?" and they don't really have any excuse. You know, he kind of they're upset because he looks so good.
Yeah.
Really, he looks so good.
Right. People are angry.
His hair.
Right.
And stuff. And it's like. Really?
I know. You just kind of want to slap him when you see him in the middle of the fire and he just looks so good. I know that, but that doesn't mean you should vote
right.
against him as
right.
governor.
You know, I'm sorry he looks good. if he looked like, you know, I don't know, like...
Doug LaMalfa?
if he looked like LaMalfa, he should grow a beard. Gavin should grow a scraggly beard and kind of, you know...
He should work on that.
Shave his head down the middle or something.
Yeah.
So, but it's an issue that he has. And then, you know, he has a long history. I saw a letter to the editor the other day talking about how he had an affair. Making it sound like it was something he just had, and this was something from when he was mayor years and years and years ago, and it didn't involve his current wife. so it's people are willing to talk smack about Gavin, but just because you want to talk smack about Gavin doesn't mean you should recall him.
Mm-hmm.
The recall is for somebody who has done, who has committed like a felony or something, you know, has done something egregious.
Right.
He has not done anything egregious. He has governed like a Democrat.
Right.
Therefore, the Republicans
want
don't
him
like
out.
Him because he's a Democrat and he's governing like a Democrat and engaging in Democratic things.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of climate change and transportation and education and his response to COVID, which was wonderful. He created this color coding for the counties and was able to flatten the curve of new COVID cases. And then he's promoted, like I said, the program that he got for me in which I got my license back. He's done all that. To increase vaccination, and it's really worked.
Right.
To the people who are willing to do it, if you want a these days, if you want a vaccine, there's no problem getting a vaccine. It's there.
Right.
And because of programs that Gavin set up, so I don't understand the recall at all. I think it's a huge waste of $285 million of our tax dollars, and. It's being used, this recall process is being used all over the state and actually all over the country. Up in Shasta County, they're recalling 3 supervisors because they followed public health.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 supervisors up there are all Republicans,
But
they want them recalled because they followed public health guidelines.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
and here in town, too, we've got the school board,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Mr. Tennis is kind of leading this thing of recalling everybody else on the school board except him, because they're wanting to follow guidance from public health in terms of the need for masking and things, and God bless the school board for doing their jobs,
right.
and deciding that in order to mask, in order to go to school, kids need a mask. Because now we are seeing this huge uptick in cases, and kids now are starting to fill up the ICUs around the country. So they need to be back in school. Kids need to be in school. They need to be around friends. But it's not that much of an imposition for them to wear a mask.
Right. Well, Bill Monroe, I appreciate your opinions and also your work as a voting rights activist and as a nurse and as somebody who has a pretty sane perspective on COVID and the governor. And I urge people to really pay attention to what they're feeling and and how they're expressing those feelings, because it is important in these times. It's very, very important.
I have another little anecdote.
Okay, well, we have to go now, though, but do you want? Is it quick?
Well, just check your status at the Secretary of State's office.
Oh.
With that, make sure you're registered, and you're registered at your current address.
Okay.
I became unregistered a couple of years ago because a county clerk in Santa Cruz County decided that I must have moved there for whatever reason.
Wow.
And they took me off the rolls here. So.
Wow. Oh, geez. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good advice.
It's not a bad idea to check that out.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest on Peace and Justice, and thank you for your work, and keep doing it.
thank you, Chris.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. So this is KZFR. It's a Peace and Justice show, but very soon it's going to be Playing Dead, and I want you to stay with us, and then after Playing Dead will be Devastation Sound. So your Friday starts now. And I want to thank our underwriters, and those would be the Four Bay Aquatic Center at 930 Garden Drive in Oroville. The Aquatic Center is open Tuesday through Sunday and rents kayaks, stand-up paddleboard, and more. And there's summer camps, classes, a facility rental for private events, and they have a beach. So the details are at Four Bay, F-O-R-E, Bay Aquatic Center, all one word, .com. Also want to thank Square Deal Mattress Factory, building the best night's sleep since 1920. Square Deal is celebrating over 100 years of making mattresses, bedding, furniture, and now face masks with the fabric of your choice right here in Chico. Square Deal is located at 1354 Humboldt Avenue. For details, see squaredealmattress.com. And if you would like to support this station, you can tip us in the tip us online at kzfr.org. That's where you can find out a lot. And Zephyr Fest is something you might be interested in. So let's go to the community calendar. Please stay safe. Watch those air quality indexes so that you don't have your windows open when they shouldn't be. And please stay safe, everybody in our mountain communities. And don't start any fires, the rest of us. All right. Love you all. Peace.
Hey listeners, it's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Megan Hammer. The Guided Forest Experiences for Well-Being will be held this Saturday, August 14th, from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. The program is designed to support health and wellness through guided immersions in natural environments to promote the well-being of both people and the land. Come visit the CSU Chico Ecological Reserves on 3521 14 Mile House Road in Forest Ranch, California. To register, you can email jaull@csuchico.edu or by calling 530-4255.